Tiny Talk, Episode 4. In this episode, organizational behavior for mushes and news and notes.
Bueno, hey, ¿tú sabes quién llegó? El perro más rico del mundo.
Hi, and welcome to Tiny Talk. I'm your host, Javelin, and this is a podcast for mushes and the people who play them. This is just going to be a short one this time because I've been busy teaching leadership and organizational behavior to doctors every day for the last 2 weeks, which hasn't left me much time for podcasting. So I'm going to recycle some things that I wrote for a mush workshop on organizational problem solving that I ran back in 1999, but I think most of this stuff is still pretty applicable. Let's start with a case that I call Mush Ado About Nothing, which we'll have dramatized here with the help of my wife.
They're screwing up the game. I wish you could see that. If you can't do something about Hamlet, at least, you can kiss your RP staff goodbye.
Billy sighed as he listened to Desdemona, one of his best RP wizards. Mush Ado About Nothing was growing, and growing to be more and more trouble. When Billy started Mush Ado About Nothing, he didn't expect it to become a large, popular mush. The idea of a mush centered around an imaginary meeting of Shakespearean and pseudo-Shakespearean characters, he thought, wouldn't appeal to too many players. As it turned out, he was wrong. Only a year since its opening, Mush Ado About Nothing regularly saw groups of 30 players online each night, and role-playing events attended by 50 or more. The initial cadre of 4 staff members had grown to 12. Billy was still god and head wizard, but he felt these days as if he was losing more and more control over the mush. Billy founded the mush with 3 friends. Romeo was a top-notch hard coder and enjoyed building as well. Juliet was interested in coordinating role-playing activities and doing some soft code on the side. Mercutio coded globals and was an avid builder. Billy maintained the game account. The 4 set policy by majority vote. Billy had 2 votes in order to break ties. The expansive growth of the game took a toll on its founders. Juliet retired her whiz bit due to lack of time, and Billy recruited players Desdemona, Viola, Othello, Toby, and Puck to serve as role-playing staff for the game. They worked as an independent committee, coordinating and directing role-playing affairs. Billy also hired 2 players, Benedict and Beatrice, to serve as newbie helpers. Meanwhile, Mercutio, in need of more coding and building help, drew on some of his contacts at Supermush, another mush with a totally different theme, and brought in Hamlet, Rosencrantz, and Ophelia. The 4 quickly began the complicated process of coding an Elizabethan economy, a comprehensive rank and status system, a dueling system, and many other intricate coded systems. These systems soon became the envy of other mushes for their elegance and verisimilitude. It didn't take long for the role-playing staff and the code team to come into conflict. From the standpoint of the code team, the role-playing staff didn't seem to appreciate their hard work. They'd often ignore the coded systems that players were supposed to use, and suggest that players simply role-play their duels. They had also retconned a few scenes that had resulted in economy snafus that took Hamlet, the economy coder, over a week to untangle. The role-playing staff, for their part, had their own peeves. They felt that the coding team wielded undue influence on the direction of the mush, and, through Mercutio, often had Billy's ear and the benefit of his attention. They, on the other hand, were left to work things out for themselves, only to find that their suggestions were disparaged by the coding team and rarely adopted. Hamlet, in particular, made it clear that his coding priorities were set by Mercutio and himself, and if the role-playing staff wanted something coded, they'd better take it up with Mercutio. As a result, the role-playing staff had begun to get frustrated, and spent fewer hours online than had previously been common. The final straw came when 2 players, the Duke of Borneo and the Lord of Norwich, fought a duel as a climax of an intricate tiny plot that had been carefully built up for 2 months by Desdemona and the other role-playing staff members. The plot called for Norwich to finally yield to the Duke and pledge fealty, allowing him to marry the Duke's daughter and resolve the conflict in a fashion typical of Shakespearean comedy. The dueling system, however, pronounced the plot a tragedy. The Duke, as it turned out, slew Norwich. Only Hamlet and Puck were present, and real life took Puck's attention off the screen for the critical 10 minutes. When she returned, the damage was done, and the players were either in shocked mourning in character or outraged out of character. Norwich, in particular, who did not expect his character to die, left in an angry huff when Hamlet informed him that the decision of the dueling system was final. Puck tried to confront Hamlet, but Hamlet logged off. Puck, overwhelmed, soon followed, but word of the scene reached Desdemona the next day.
Billy, we think this is a great mush, and code has its place, but it can't take the place of RP, and code admin like Hamlet have no right to make RP decisions. We've thought about it, all five of us, and there have to be some changes. Either he goes or we go. What's it going to be?
Billy's head spun. He knew that if the coders left, he'd never be able to maintain the code, and Hamlet's systems were among the best and most complex he'd seen anywhere. But without the role-playing staff, there was no mush ado about nothing. No matter what he did, could the mush survive? Was it worth the hassle? To be or not to be, he thought wryly, isn't the question. It's how to be. So that's the case. That's a hypothetical case. And if you want to think about what you'd do if you were Billy before you listen to the rest of the podcast, this is a good place to pause. So the framework that I teach for organizational analysis is based on the work of Lee Bowman and Terrence Deal's book, Reframing Organizations. The third edition of that book was published in 2003. Their basic idea is that any organizational situation or challenge can be viewed through different lenses or frames, which emphasize different aspects of the problem. As they propose, there are four frames that are useful to consider: the structural frame, human resources frame, symbolic frame, and political frame. The structural frame focuses on how an organization is structured, its hierarchy, its coordination, its communication and command channels. This frame usually assumes that problems are based in inefficient or inappropriate structure, and that structural change affords a potential solution. Structurally, the organization chart for Mush Ado About Nothing has the administrators working in silos, separated by function. You have role-playing administrators, coding, player help, and the coders in particular are represented by one of the founding administrators, while the other active founder has a more global role as head wizard. Communication could certainly be improved. It sounds like there's a lot of indirect communication to Billy rather than direct discussions between the administrators. The human resources frame focuses on the needs of the people in the organization as people. It asks if those needs are being met, and if not, how could they be better met? It draws our attention to issues of relationships, expectations, needs for belonging and validation, many of which are present in this case. These admin teams, in Much Ado About Nothing, demonstrate serious human resource issues. Although there's effective teamwork within each group of administrators, each was hired in a different fashion, and the coders in particular come from outside the mush and may have less familiarity with the game theme and appear to have greater cliquishness within themselves. These two groups of administrators also have different needs. The coders seem to want to have their elegant code used and appreciated, while the role-playing staff wants to have their vision of the world respected. The symbolic frame deals with the organizational culture, myths, and symbols. In many ways, a vision statement serves as an important unifying symbol in many organizations. Some mushes have adopted vision statements, and others just sort of make them implicit in their theme. Mushes in general have a pretty rich organizational culture and mythology, particularly role-playing mushes. When we're using the symbolic frame, we consider how people bring meaning to an organization. For example, in the medical school where I work, there's an obvious set of symbols that has to do with the length and some other features of the white coat that medical students, residents, and attending physicians wear. One of the things it does is tell you who's a medical student and who's a resident and who's an attending physician, and thus provide some structural cues as well as some important meaning about the preservation of hierarchy. Symbolically, in this mush, there's a fight over the game culture, about the importance of role-playing versus coded systems. Moreover, the administrators don't have a strong organizational culture among themselves that values working things out through compromise or collaboration. This is going to lead them to turn to the political frame, which focuses on the use of power, broadly defined as the ability to control and direct resources. Political problems often center around who determines how a scarce resource, for example, the attention of the mush god, or a bit of coding time, or the player's ability to do things, is allocated. And political solutions look for ways to make that allocation fit the goals of the organization. In Much Ado About Nothing, there's an obvious political struggle over control of the game. The coders and role-playing staff have different sources of power, and both groups seem more interested in flexing their muscles than working together. Although Billy is perceived as being the overall leader, his power seems to be based in the goodwill of the players and the administrators. So if it were you, how would you handle the problem? Well, if you want to hear some strategies, the participants in this workshop back in 99 included Asherah, Amberl, Apocalypse, Moretta, Balerion, Vexon, Trispus, and Orza. And you can read about their solutions by following the link in the show notes and reading the transcript of the workshop. And of course, if you want to suggest your own ideas, you can reply to the show notes at community.penrush.org. One piece of news and notes. Wes Platt, who most people would know as Brody of Other Space Mush, wanted to let you know that the MooWiki, M-U-W-I-K-I, is now open at http://mu.wikia.com. He's inviting Mush developers and players to log in there and post pages and reviews for their games, as well as articles, code snippets, role-playing logs, and lots of other things. So go check it out. This is one of those cases we talked about in the last episode of an opportunity for people to contribute back to the community. And that's it for short episode 4 of Tiny Talk. Music for this episode of Tiny Talk comes from Songo 21, from the Yego Songo 21 album, and Jamendo.com. As usual, show notes are at community.penmush.org. Look for the Tiny Talk icon on the right side of the screen. You can also subscribe to this podcast on the iTunes Store or with your favorite podcatcher. Tiny Talk is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. So share it as is, just don't sell it. If you have comments, mushing questions you'd like answered, news and notes, or suggestions for future shows, send email to tinytalk@javelin.penmush.org or leave a voicemail at 206-666-5114 and let me know if it's okay to play it back on the show. Until next time, keep the text flowing. Bueno, ¿qué? ¿Te diste cuenta que la apariencia... Ha 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 ha!